talking on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn.
Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you statewide on Civic Media. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits. All points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history, going right to the front lines of history in the making. A lot of it made and starting today, roughly 10 a.m. Central Time, give or take a little bit. The Atlanta grand jury report was issued. I'm going to go through it, tell you some of the legal things that were solved in it, some of the legal questions that were not solved in it. But let's take a quick overview. Remember, initially, Fannie Willis, who is the terrific DA, elected DA of Atlanta, didn't want it released. And she made a petition to the court that it not be released, and she had a good reason for it. Most prosecutors would. She said, look, you reveal this report, and by the way, this is an unusual grand jury. We don't have a system like this in Wisconsin. This is an initial sort of advisory, I don't want to use the word fake, but what it is it's a grand jury that isn't really issuing any sort of indictment or anything of that nature. They're simply giving an opinion of what some reasonable grand jurors would think. And Fannie Willis can do with it whatever she wants. But if she wants down in Atlanta to go forward to the prosecution of Donald Trump or any witness, she then has to go before another grand jury, a grand jury which would then decide whether or not they would recommend an indictment. So it's really a very, very early part in the process. And one of the things that concerns me is the more crooked Donald Trump and his running dogs and fellow travelers continue to run for president, gets harder and harder the more you delay. She's doing her best. I mean, it's Merrick Garland and some of the other prosecutors, Alvin Bragg in New York, who should frankly be showing the guts that Fannie Willis is showing. But let me boil it down. First of all, it was a redacted report. The judge did permit it over her objection to be released, but her concerns were satisfied. How are they satisfied? Well, it doesn't mention anything in there of what the grand jury recommends about the prosecution of anybody by name. And her objection to having it released at all was based on the fact that then somebody who, if they are indicted, will go, oh, well, there's all this pretrial publicity and I couldn't get a fair trial. So the judge, as it was released, it was done in a way that satisfied her concerns, but it also showed some transparency. Now, it was about 9 pages. It was redacted. Names were redacted. And remember one thing, a lot of people who haven't studied this very carefully would go, well, you know, did they indict Trump or not? If they didn't mention Trump, what good is it? Trump is what is called the target of the investigation. There are 3 statuses in investigation if you're called in front of a grand jury. The best one that you want for yourself is that you just happen to be a witness. Nobody says you did anything wrong. You happen to be a witness, and there you are. The second one is what's called the subject. Now, you don't want to be a subject. A subject is somebody who isn't a target. They're not the ones they're going after, but you're a little close to the flame here, and you could be swept up in it. And then at the center of the bullseye is what's called the target. The target here is Donald Trump. The target here, Donald Trump made the phone call to Brad Raffensperger telling him to basically forge over 11,000 votes to swing the election in Georgia. So there are no names mentioned, but there are a couple of highlights. One of them is they said that their advice is that there was no fraud in Georgia that affected the election. Right in Donald Trump's face, he went around going, there was fraud. They said, there's no fraud. That was an excellent, excellent result for the prosecutor and for justice. The second thing they said, which is very interesting and shocking, is they said one or more witnesses committed perjury. Now think about who the witnesses are. Rudy Giuliani was a witness. Mark Meadows was a witness. General Michael Flynn was a witness. A lot of other witnesses. Fannie Willis has the transcripts of all their testimony. She has the unredacted report in her office. That was not released. So we don't know which witnesses they thought perjured themselves, but perjury is a crime. Perjury is a felony, as a matter of fact. You say something under oath in a grand jury and it doesn't, it's false. Well, I mean, you can get prosecuted for perjury. Now, in addition to the fact that they said there was no fraud, that everybody who said there was fraud was, is lying, and that they felt some people committed perjury, they had recommendations for prosecutions against some people, not just for perjury, but for people who they felt were in on trying to fraudulently overturn the election. But they don't, and this is a redacted report. Those names are not released. Fannie Willis, the DA, knows who those names are. But I don't know who those names are, neither do you right now. So the recommendations on prosecutions are not included. The recommendations on prosecutions are not included. Now, this is an advisory grand jury, as I said. Fannie Willis is going to look at this. And she's going to make two decisions. One decision is, who does she take to a real grand jury then to get the indictment? Because now she has a snapshot, a camera shot of what reasonable grand jurors in general would say, what they would say. And then secondly, for what crimes? Perjury is a crime and it's prosecuted, but there's more perjury in a grand jury than you'd like to think, quite frankly. A lot of people lie, unfortunately. So just because someone said something that's not true, you also have to prove that they knew it wasn't true, that they did it intentionally, and it can be done and it should be done in the right case. But the real thing here is, who are they recommending be prosecuted for trying to overturn the election, for falsely overturning the election? That's the one we're interested in. We're interested in both, but the fact is that some of these people, very likely the ones they recommended prosecution for fraudulently trying to overturn the election, are also the ones who lied. And so you get them on both. I'm going to tell you an interesting historical fact here in Wisconsin, and this doesn't happen anymore, but historically, certainly up till, I want to say 20 years ago, maybe, if a police officer shot someone or killed someone or did something, they're never prosecuted. But the DA in the past, not John Chisholm. John Chisholm is one of the best DAs in the country, quite frankly. But in the past, and there were some good DAs, but they would convene something that looked like a grand jury. And everybody would say, okay, then we'll leave it to the grand jury. But it wasn't set up the way a trial would be set up. Grand juries, for instance, the whole idea behind a grand jury, in Wisconsin, we don't call it a grand jury, we call it something else. But, you know, the defendant doesn't get to come in and listen to it, the target. The target doesn't get to put on his own witnesses and give his side of the story to the grand jury to try to get them not to go the way of the prosecutor. There's an old saying that a grand jury would indict a ham sandwich. A prosecutor could indict a ham sandwich in front of a grand jury because all they hear is the bad stuff for the defendant, no good stuff, nothing exculpatory. So the way police involved shootings, killing somebody, historically have been handled in Milwaukee, something the equivalent of a grand jury with a different name would be set up. DA would go in and show whatever he wanted. But in those cases, it wouldn't be to try to get a prosecution, but it would be to show exculpatory material of why it might not have, you couldn't prove beyond a reasonable doubt that that's what happened. The grand juries frequently, they were bothered by it, but they would come back and say, well, no indictment. In other words, it was a flip side of what normally happens. And then everybody would say, well, he took it to a grand jury. That doesn't happen anymore. And I think that was a very bad thing to do. But this is different. This is a normal grand jury, although advisory. They apparently have it in Atlanta. They don't have it up here. And Fannie Willis right now has a report with the names of people that grand jury thought had perjured themselves and the names of people the grand jury thought should be prosecuted for fraudulently overturning the election. There's only 9 pages, and you may say, oh, listen, this is an anticlimactical thing. It's an anticlimax. We haven't really gotten any info. We've gotten a ton of info. We know that the election wasn't fraudulent, so all these attempts to overturn it were themselves fraudulent, number one. Number two, we know some of the witnesses lied in the opinion of the grand jury. And they recommended further action against them by Fannie Willis. Number three, Fannie Willis has cover now to go to a regular grand jury. Hope she does it real quick, because the longer Trump runs for president, the more political it looks, the tougher it is. In my view, Garland should have gone on this thing a lot earlier. Fannie Willis has guts, real guts. I really like her. I think she's doing a great job. So there you have it. It came out, and a lot of people go, oh, well, it didn't indict Trump, so maybe he won. Well, no, he didn't win. The target is not called before the grand jury normally, and he wasn't here. But a lot of his fellow travelers and running dogs who were part of his attempt to fraudulently overturn the election were there in front of them. I don't know who took the fifth, who didn't. Taking the fifth is not perjury, but if some of them were dumb enough to lie and the grand jury thinks that they were in on it, they got a twofer against them. One of them is perjury, and the other one is they're going to hope that Fannie Willis goes against them. So stay tuned. The next word that's going to come out of this is, when is it going to be submitted to a regular grand jury? Or is Fannie Willis going to try to go ahead and charge based on this, even though it's advisory, because she can bring criminal charges for felonies without going to a grand jury? What is she going to do? Has a lot of guts. She's been getting death threats. We got to stand by her. We got to stand by these tough independent prosecutors. On a break, lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after.
Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Direct, our lines are open, 844-967-2789. We're going to Detroit, Michigan. Andrew of Detroit, thanks for calling, my friend. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Matt, I agree with you about what's going on in Georgia. It's all good. I do have a theory, though. I'm thinking that with anything Merrick Garland could bring, the next Republican president can just pardon all these people that are tried in federal court. As far as Georgia, with the number of MAGA people in Georgia, I don't know. You only need one MAGA on a jury, and that's the end of convicting him. I think the only way we'll get him convicted is in New York. But again, all it takes is one MAGA on the jury. So the best I'm hoping for is indictments. Want to hear what you think, Matt? Thanks.
Yeah, no, Andrew, I think that's right. But I will say this. I mean, jurors, once they're in court, they really do take things seriously. And I'll tell you what, something else is, a good prosecutor, by questioning, can throw off the really hardcore people who would never vote for Trump or never convict Trump. And just as a good defense lawyer will throw off people who look like they're going to go after him no matter what. Problem in New York is this Alvin Bragg is no good. Alvin Bragg took a dive. Alvin Bragg, remember, he had Pomerantz and some of the best prosecutors in the state about to go after Trump criminally. And then he ran for DA in this Cy Vance, who is an excellent DA, but you know, he didn't check the right identity politics boxes, so he didn't run. And this clown Bragg comes in and shuts it down. I'm very concerned about Alvin Bragg. I got to tell you, if I were the attorney general in that state, I'd convene a grand jury to look into Alvin Bragg and look into his bank accounts and why he shut that prosecution down. But what I'm interested in, Andrew, is this. I don't want Trump running again. Things can take a bad bounce. He could become president. Anything that can squeeze him out of running again, after that, who pardons who and blah, blah, blah. Okay, it can happen. I'm less interested in that. I do not want the clown reelected president of the United States. Wisco Paul, my friend, thanks for calling Western Mind Day. Wisco Paul.
Very quickly on Trump today, he needs to be prosecuted, and it needs to be shown that there is a rule of law in this country. So some other guy or president gets in there and he is a little bit smarter and does actually overturn an election. For goodness sakes, we have three Supreme Court justices in this state that wanted to overturn the last election in the state of Wisconsin. And I want to say one thing, for the most part, and I'm changing this quick, I'm sorry, Matt, but for the most part, Tony Evers' budget is pretty good. It looks like it's pretty much for the people, the common people, and the Republicans are basically having nothing to do with it. So, you know, all these roads lead right back to the Supreme Court race. We got to get democracy back in a state, if nothing else. Right. It has to come. It's going to be unlivable here. This is ridiculous. These Republicans, they're out of ideas, and they're going against the will of the people. And I get pretty ticked off these clowns anyway. I'm going to let you go, Matt. Have a good day.
Paul, love your call. Let me tell you something. You hit the vote for Janet Protasiewicz next Tuesday. It's next Tuesday. What is today? Thursday? 5 days? There's a rule in politics that people start to make their minds up the Friday before. That's 96 hours. And you can't stop it then. It's like stopping an avalanche. Janet Protasiewicz, remember that. Protasiewicz. She has more prosecutor experience than all these other three candidates combined. Judicial experience. She's terrific. She said right out, these maps are rigged. The minute I'm sworn in, bring a map rigging lawsuit. And then she said, too, that 1849 statute, she said, I'm pro-choice and I'm not putting up with any of this stuff. She will vote to certify whoever wins the 2024 election, regardless of party. The clown Kelly would not. Same with Doro. They're bad news. Kelly appeared before the Price County, that's up around the Park Falls area, Price County Republican Party, and boasted of the outside money that he was getting in. This just happened. He goes, you got to vote for me over Doro because these outside groups won't support her. I can bring in $20 million. Hey, look, this is the guy that went around the state. This guy, Kelly, went around the state with Gableman talking at Republican Party meetings, trying to gin up a fraud claim. And the clown is saying, well, Janet Protasiewicz says she's pro-choice, so therefore she shouldn't be running for the Supreme Court. This guy's bad news, okay? Very bad news. And so is Doro. Doro was the one that sentenced the fifth time drunk driver to an illegally low sentence. And then when somebody wrote her and claimed, you know, change it a little bit, she goes, that's double jeopardy. That's not double jeopardy. I mean, I don't know, quite frankly, how much legal training she had. I really don't. And if you put either Doro or Kelly on the Supreme Court, and to Wisco Paul's point, three of those justices this last time weren't going to certify Biden. These people would keep gerrymandering in there. They would keep that 1849 statute in there. And they would certify the Republican no matter what. We talk about these issues a lot. I want to talk about them right now one more time. Vote for Janet Protasiewicz on Tuesday. And you probably have a day or two more to vote in person absentee. But if you don't, make a plan to vote on Tuesday, the 21st, Janet Protasiewicz. You can't have a guy like Kelly going up to Price County going, I can bring in $20 million in dark money. And I'm running for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. There shouldn't be dark money. There shouldn't be dark money. This is a bad thing he did. Very bad. It was a very bad thing he did. And Doro, I mean, she has baggage, not as bad as Mitchell, but almost. I mean, look, Janet Protasiewicz next Tuesday, the 21st of February. And then it's going to be two, one-on-one, the final twosome. She's going to have to fight for 6 weeks with all the slime stuff from the blue lines and E-lines and this and that one. Going to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Direct, our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Go right to the lines. Gene of Eau Claire, my friend. Thanks for calling Western Mind, Gene of Eau Claire.
Good afternoon, Matt. Great show as usual. I just wanted a second with Scott Paul. You know, I was watching Governor Evers give his budget, and I was watching, you know, all of the different things. I know they went around specifically to all of the cities to see what their needs were, Governor Evers did and the people that work with them. And when I watch, you know, the different things that he brought up to help each community, you know, and the shared revenue and all these things that are for the people of the state of Wisconsin, you know, I saw the people with the D's after their name getting up and clapping. Yay, we're getting some things for the people. And then I was watching the people with the R after their name, no response. No response. It just amazed me. Here those people are working for us. And they're sitting on their butts, and they really don't care about the people. So we got to get out, vote for a judge that's for the people. And I hope everybody, please get out. Your vote counts for Judge Janet. We need her really badly, and your vote counts so much if you want to change, you know, the way that our state's going. So thank you so much, Matt. Keep up the great work.
Thank you very much, Gene. I always love your calls. I'll tell you what, two quick things that you made a point of, and this is very, very important. One of them is absolutely vote for Judge Janet, or we're going to have gerrymandering for 10 more years. I mean, this is a 10-year term in her judgeship. If we don't have Judge Janet, if Kelly or Doro go in, that's curtains on for any attempt to get rid of gerrymandering. And frankly, any attempt to certify whoever wins in 2024, if it's the Democrat, without having to go to a Supreme Court and hope that the six tarantulas do the right thing, which I don't have any reason to believe they will. But on Evers, you know, you're right, it's a good budget. And I looked at them too. Now, in the old days, you'd get up and you'd clap for the governor, or at least you wouldn't sit there. These guys are sitting there mocking them. And then I don't know if you saw Voss's interview afterwards, the clown. Now, remember, he's illegitimate. He's gerrymandered. He wouldn't be speaker in a 50-50. Right now, the Democrats get as many or more votes than the Republicans, and they get a third of the action in the legislature. He would not be speaker. The clown gets up and says, well, I thought I was listening, quote, this is what he said. I thought I was listening to Oprah Winfrey, a billion here, a billion there. Well, first of all, Oprah Winfrey doesn't give away $1 billion. Secondly, hey Voss, how do you think teachers get paid? How do you think the UW system is sustained? How do you think cops and firefighters get paid? How do you think our correction system gets supported? How do you think that we try to keep our rivers clean, even when you have guys like Fred Prenn, Cancer Man, the dentist from Wausau, who had the deciding vote to poison our streams, right? I mean, give me a break. The clown sat there and said, well, it reminded me of Oprah Winfrey. Very disrespectful, very incompetent, very illegitimate. But it doesn't surprise me because this is happening at the federal level. And I see the lines, they're alive, gets you very much in shortly. Fascinating proposal has been made on our debt thing by two Democratic senators, Jeff Merkley of Oregon, Tim Kaine of Virginia. Here's what they proposed. Lying Kevin McCarthy has said, well, unless we cut into Social Security and Medicare, we're not going to extend the debt limit. If the debt limit isn't extended, this just came out, we're going to run out of cash between July and September. Because what happens right now is we're using incoming revenues to pay our debts, but they will run out between July and September. That would mean we lose 3 million jobs. The cost of a 30-year mortgage would go up 130 grand more, 130 grand over 30 years. 401ks would lose about 20 grand each on average. We have paid all our bills since 1789. This would be the first time we default on our treasury bonds. They are the cornerstone of domestic and international investment in the economies. There'd be a recession. So Merkley and Kane had a fascinating idea. Then I'll go to the lines and hear any comments. Moscow Mitch, back in 2011, even when Obama was president, made a proposal. Moscow Mitch. Moscow Mitch said on the debt ceiling, there's a lot of politics. So why don't we do the following? We will pass a law that the president can raise the debt ceiling on his own anytime he wants. But the Congress can override it by a joint resolution of 2/3 of the legislators. Immediately, this is Moscow Mitch. Merkley and Kane put in what's called the Protect Our Credit Act of 2023, and they just put that in there. That is actually a brilliant idea. The president should be able to extend this debt limit because it's simply paying for things that Congress already approved. It's like paying our credit card bill after we've already charged stuff. Doesn't say anything about future expenditures. But if 2/3 of the Congress think we shouldn't do that this time because some of those expenditures, whatever, and if 2/3 of them don't want it, that means that's bipartisan. It was a brilliant idea, in my opinion. And I hope that that act passes. The problem is crooked Kevin McCarthy won't even let it come to a vote. So you need a discharge petition. We need five Republicans to go along with the Democrats to discharge it. Are there five of them with any guts? We'll see. We're going to the lines. Joanna Madison, my friend, thanks for calling. What's your mind today, Joanne?
Fantastic show. And I'm just wondering about why you think Tony Evers was a little light on the UW system budget, the Madison budget in particular, but how we are funding the universities. I know that we have so many priorities, and universities are not the only way that we can serve citizens, but I'm just wondering, I haven't figured it out. I'm going to be spending some time this evening trying to juggle all the facts, but I know you know, you probably have an idea as to what's going on.
Yeah, and let me put in some context what I'm saying. I didn't say just now that I thought Evers was light on the UW. In the past, what I have said that is that he is either light or not aggressive enough on certain things. So let's talk about the UW. He's trying to run the state with a hostile legislature against him. I understand that. And they have, in the Senate, unless we win the 8th congressional special election this April, we have a good candidate, Jody Habersinnigan, but unless we win it, they'll have 2/3 of the state Senate. That's veto-proof. And they're within two seats in the state assembly of being veto-proof. So I understand all that. But here's my view on the University of Wisconsin, and I'd like to see him emphasize it more. I'm on the board of visitors, by the way, of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. I'm also on the development board for their graduate school. My dad was a professor at UWM for over 34 years. And UWM is very much part of our family. So, and I'm a graduate of the University of Wisconsin Law School, Madison, and the whole system is very much in our family. Here's my thought, John. When I was in law school in the early 70s, my tuition each semester was $250 a semester. But that's because the state paid something like 48% of the operating costs of the UW. Now the state pays about 17% of the operating costs. So the tuitions have gone up. Now they've not gone up as much as in other universities, but the University of Wisconsin system is the lifeblood of this state. It's the soul of this state. And the main campus is Madison. When UWM was founded in the late 50s, and my father went on the faculty in 1963, the comparison was made to Berkeley and UCLA. Madison was Berkeley, UWM was going to be UCLA. And UWM right now is a a 1A research institution. It is one of 130 universities out of thousands in the country that's considered a premier research institution. It's a terrific campus. You could go to Madison and you can go to UWM and get an education that's the equivalent of an Ivy League education, of a Michigan education, Berkeley, and you can go to a lot of the other campuses. You can go to Eau Claire, Oshkosh, Green Bay, La Crosse. These are terrific, terrific educations. Stevens Point. I have family that have gone to La Crosse. I have family that have gone to Stevens Point. These are great, great campuses. Now, the state of Wisconsin should increase the operational cost contribution north of 17%. Tuition should come down, not because we don't need the revenue. The revenue should be supplied through the income tax, which is a progressive tax. It should not be supplied with sales tax or property taxes, which are regressive, and it should not be supplied by tuitions. That's number one. Somebody told me they went to UW in the early 60s and the tuition was $50 a semester. For a long time, CCNY in New York, one of the best universities in the country, was free. You know, you try to keep the tuitions down as much as possible. I would like to see Evers advocate this more. What he is he's very laid back. He's a good man. But his response very frequently is, it's a hot mess. I can't believe they're doing this to me. That's not Matt Flynn's response, okay? Matt Flynn would be in every damn legislative district in the state wailing on the clowns that are in there, wailing on the illegitimate clowns that are in there. They're not going to vote for Evers anyway. They're not going to vote for Evers anyway. And so the point of the matter is, I don't mean the people. They'll vote, but not the clowns in the illegitimate gerrymandered legislature. So here's a couple of things. The capital budget. We just came away from a meeting of the Board of Visitors this morning. Just got off of the Zoom just a little bit ago. The capital budget in this state is essential that the state of Wisconsin, in my view, and the legislature is the impediment, supports capital expenditures more than they do. And I'm talking about new buildings. Do you know that UW-Madison, 2018, when I ran for governor, I met with some of the people in the chemistry building. That chemistry building is so old, it had been constructed before the discovery of certain new elements. There are some elements in chemistry that were discovered after the chemistry building was built. Now, I understand they're building a new chemistry building. Maybe they already built it. Great. And there should be an engineering building over there. And there will be. Great. And there should be a health sciences building in UWM. And I think that's going to be built. Great. But do you know, let's take UWM. UWM, 82% of the graduates of UWM, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, stay and work in Wisconsin. They stay and work in Wisconsin. In the health services field, you could be OT, PT, nurse, or whatever. 97% of them get jobs the minute they graduate. The legislature, in my view, needs to put more money into the UW system. And in the past, we had strong bipartisan support for the UW system. Remember Warren Knowles, the governor? His brother was also named Knowles, was the chairman of the Wisconsin Alumni Association back in the late 60s. And everybody, Tommy Thompson, was a strong supporter. It's essential that more money be put into it. I'm not faulting Evers, Joanne. If he could, I'm sure he would. But what I say is, for God's sake, when you're dealing with some of these people, instead of saying it's a hot mess, I don't know why they're doing this to me, it started with Scott Walker. Scott Walker didn't graduate from college, not because he didn't have the money, but because, in my view, he got frozen out by people at Marquette because he ran for student body president, didn't win, and the copies of the newspaper, the student newspaper that endorsed his opponent, disappeared the day after they came out, and people gave him the cold shoulder. He hated higher education. He got rid of shared governance. He attacked tenure. He has diminished the prestige of the university. It really goes back to Scott Walker. And a lot of the people that came in the gerrymandered legislature remember that tradition, and they do not remember why. The University of Wisconsin system, every campus, it's the lifeblood, it's the soul of the state, it's the soul of our economy. We need more money in it, and it's got to be bipartisan. Joanne, thank you very much for calling in. Sorry to get on my high horse, but I believe very passionately in that. We're going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Director, lines are open, 844-967-2789. I want to say this about a subject that really concerns me, and it always has, before I go to our final subject, and that is bullying in our schools. And there was a horrible report in the paper today. In the West Allis, West Milwaukee School District, the 12-year-old kid who had some neurological issue, and it made him limp or walk very oddly. And he was bullied. He finally had to leave the school. And here's what they did. First, the kids squirted him with water. Then they choked him. Then they knocked him down and his head hit the pavement. And the administration, according to the article, said, well, we looked into it and it wasn't bullying because of his disability, it was just bullying. That is the stupidest, cruelest thing that I have ever heard. 12-year-old kid with a neurological issue and walks in an odd way to people. I mean, he's handicapped. He's squirted with water, choked, and thrown on the sidewalk, and his head hits the sidewalk, and they go, well, they sort of parse the motive. Don't give me that. Don't give me that. In New York, there was a 14-year-old girl who was bullied, and they get her in the hallway, and then another girl punched her in the face. She went home, and that evening, she committed suicide. I'm tired of this. I'm tired of weak administrators who go through, check some boxes, well, we had sensitivity training or whatever. If I were the principal in any of these schools, first of all, the girls who punched her in New York have been criminally prosecuted. Secondly, I would criminally prosecute the kids who choked him and threw him on the sidewalk so he hit his head. I would discipline the administrators who said, well, yeah, it was bullying, but it wasn't because of his handicap, which is not true in my view, but not only that. Are you kidding me? There shouldn't be any bullying at all. And if I were a principal or a superintendent, I'd get them all in a convocation and say, it's very simple. If there's any bullying, you're out of here. You're toast. You're expelled. And, if it's a couple of kids fighting, you can say, all right, they're suspended and they get one chance, that kind of thing. Secondly, kids that act like that, I wouldn't give them college recommendations. I wouldn't give them any recommendations. They graduate. Let's say they stay there and they go, okay, we want to, from an employer or from a school, industrial school, a college, you're not getting a recommendation. This bullying has to be cracked down on. And there are too many administrators out there who are paying lip service and just checking boxes. And I'm very, very tired of it. Very tired of it. Speaking of bullying, and this is more than bullying, this is genocide and sadism. Ukraine. The Ruskies have now positioned 97% of their armed forces in Ukraine, of their army in Ukraine, or on the border about to go into Ukraine, 97%. They have also positioned much of their air force in Belarus and on the border, and on Russia and on the border with Ukraine. Ironically, the word is from our intelligence community that they're afraid to commit too much of their air force because the Ukrainians' air defense system have been so effective, they'd be shot down. The second thing is the president of Moldova resigned. Moldova is another country to the west of Ukraine but it borders on Romania, and it has a section called Transnistria, and somehow the Ruskies somehow managed to station 2,000 troops there, which are there right now. They must get in through the Black Sea. And intelligence was leaked that they are planning a coup, that they're going to plant false flag stuff of violence against the Russians and go in, and the president stepped down. I hope they get another strong president, somebody like Zelensky. The United States is standing by, and thank God for Joe Biden. Thank God for Joe Biden. Donald Trump, we're in there. He's afraid of Putin. Blackmailed by Putin, funded by Putin, said he'd take us out of NATO. He'd expose Poland, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Bulgaria, all of them again. Just like right after the Second World War, Trump's a Russian agent, should be in prison, not president. But right now, China, Iran, and North Korea are supplying chips to Russia for their war effort. And there was some discussion, should we sanction the companies that are doing this? Duh. We should sanction Japan, strike that China, Iran, and North Korea. I thought we already were sanctioning Iran and North Korea. And we are. We got to clamp down a lot more. Companies that supply Iran and North Korea have to be sanctioned. And as far as the Chinese are concerned, I'm going to say something. I'm damn tired of it. They continue to do this stuff. They support China in this genocidal attack on Ukraine, keep threatening Taiwan. And you know how many of their students we admit every year to some of our universities like MIT and Caltech to learn how to make nuclear weapons and help their industry? Finally, we started to crack down recently. And if there's students that come out of schools over there that are linked to the military, we don't let them in. I would simply say, you know something? There's going to be a moratorium. There are no Chinese, communist Chinese students coming in. We want Chinese students, the Taiwanese get to come in, and we make sure that they're not being funneled across the border. None. They want prestige. They want a good education. They want to spy on us, and they want to steal our tech. And I'm very tired of it. In fact, the Chinese have also set up, quote, police stations. They don't call them that. They call them service stations throughout Europe. And they had one, I think, in Ohio. I think we shut it down to help people in this country with immigration thing. What they do is they spy on their own kind, threaten them. One of them threatened a guy who is a congressional candidate in New York, believe it or not, because of things he said about China, and then they threatened their relatives. We've got to crack down all this fuzzy stuff about the Chinese. I like the Chinese people. I like them in Taiwan. And the people in mainland China, they're good people. They're made in the image and likeness of God. They have a commie government. They're communist Chinese. And they are very, very dangerous to us. They got to stop supporting Russia in the war in Ukraine. It's a genocidal, sadistic war. And that we've got to do something about it. We're coming to the end of the show. Great show. Great callers, as always. I waxed a little passionate about some issues that I care deeply about. Matt Flynn Direct will be back. Same time, same place tomorrow. I'm signing off for today.